The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
The following podcast is sponsored by AppFolio Investment Management.
In a recent study, AppFolio Investment Management customers reported up to 70% growth in their total EUM over a one-year period. How? They were able to cut fundraising time down by 50%, automate waterfall distributions, and impress investors with a professional self-service investor portal. AppFolio Investment Management is your partner in commercial real estate. Learn why thousands of real estate investment managers are choosing AppFolio Investment Management at appfolioinvestmentmanagement.com.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk last mile logistics with David Hunt. He's managing partner and head of global logistics investments at Thor Equities. Previously, he was a European director with the Blackstone Group's European logistics platform, Logicor. He joins us from London. David Hunt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you very much for having us.
Well, let's take this thing that last mile. We're almost a pay dirt here, it sounds like. What about last mile logistics in Europe? I mean, here in the United States, there's so much talked about. There's so much money going into it. Is it basically the same song in Europe?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's a few years behind in some aspects to the US, as typically and cyclically happens. But certainly, the landscape is looking very positive. You know, it's looking very positive in the sense that the demand is increasing. We've seen occupiers taking more space than ever. You know, supply is pretty limited. You know, vacancy rates are going down. You know, rents are going up. So you could almost say that all the sails are blowing in the right direction. You know, coupled with the fact of, you know, what you've just alluded to, that insatiable appetite from investors to be able to take a piece of this subsector, you know, which is also driving cap rates. So, you know, generally, I would say that, you know, a very healthy position.
You know, European cities oftentimes are very dense, more so than most American cities. Does that come into play just in terms of trying to get close to, on the one hand, many American cities are very spread out. So obviously the vans need to run all over creation. European cities tend to be more densely packed. But then does that pose any problems just in terms of finding last mile facilities, last mile logistic facilities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's I think probably the perfect examples of densities in Europe where, you know, every occupier and every investor wants to be in is, you know, London and Paris, right? And finding land and opportunities to either, you know, develop ground up or reposition are scarce, which is why ultimately they're sort of mini gold mines. You know, if you can unlock one of these positions close to the urban population center or to the consumer, then, you know, the occupiers are going to be biting your hand off and you're going to be in a good position. So, and also coupled with the fact that it's quite competitive. So, yeah, they are definitely difficult to find.
So what is driving, or who are the major players that are driving the expansion of last mile logistics in Europe, just in terms of e-tailers, as they're often called, the electronic retailers? Are they, I'm assuming that they're the ones that are primarily driving it and creating the need for this real estate to be established so that they can go ahead and deliver their products?
Yeah, I mean, look, e-commerce is still the main driver. There's no doubt about that, although there are other, you know, kind of subsectors and demand vehicles. But, you know, e-commerce is definitely driving this movement. And look, there are you know, a bunch of leading occupiers that are really driving this, you know, to mention a few, Amazon, clearly. You know, I believe that Amazon, since they started in the UK, they've never given a building back. And yet, you know, every year they require, you know, millions and millions of square meters, or, you know, hundreds of thousands, or even millions of square feet every year. So, you know, those are the sort of players that are really, you know, really driving the market, but with many others.
How does the last mile logistics sector differ, if it differs at all, between Eurozone nations?
Well, it definitely does. You know, every jurisdiction is different. Every city is different. Clearly every municipality within every city is different. And, you know, the important part, I think, the most valuable part for us as investors and generally in the market is to have local presence. I think understanding the nuances, you know, regarding development and, you know, planning regulations together with any political obstacles that could arise, I think is key. And, you know, that's very different in the UK than what it is, say, for example, in Poland. So, you know, the key is just really understanding bottom up.
So where do you see the investment opportunities in last mile? Again, you know, we hear so much about it and it's clearly a growth sector, but from an investment standpoint, you know, where are the prime opportunities?
I mean, it really does this depend on your risk profile and, you know, really with the sort of returns that you're looking for. In terms of advanced countries that are leading the pack for rental growth, for example, or low vacancy figures, and really when you triangulate the data, where is most of the growth coming? You would definitely say the UK, Germany, and France, because inherently some of those cities, but I would say most population centers, urban population centers across Europe, but because those cities are so dense, you know, the real need for last mile is certainly there, right? Being 10 kilometers, 10 miles closer to the city, you know, could mean an extra 20 minutes, 30 minutes in traffic, which in terms of transport costs and time to, you know, to a supply chain and to some of these occupiers is quite meaningful. But what we're seeing is in that other jurisdictions and other countries, you know, the likes of Southern Europe or CEE, Central Europe, before pre-pandemic, e-commerce penetration figures were roughly 3-5% in some of these countries, whereas it's been projected and boosted to like 10-11% now. So actually, in some of these countries, you know, call it a, or cities, shall we refer to a Milan or a Madrid or a Warsaw, pre-pandemic, we didn't see that huge demand coming through. And now we're really seeing it like we did in the UK or Germany 5 years back. So I think there's a lot of opportunity across Europe. I would definitely focus on urban population centers. But ultimately, I think there are opportunities in all of those countries. You know, one thing, you know, one point about the UK, France and Germany at the moment is that, you know, the yields are relatively low. Yields in the UK well below 3%, Germany also. So actually, if you're looking to buy yield, they're probably not the countries to enter. But at the same time, those are also the countries and the cities that you're seeing the highest rental growth. So it really does depend. In terms of development, you clearly want to develop in locations where there's a lack of land, a lack of competition, because that's ultimately where you're going to be able to drive, one, your rents, and two, the saleability of the asset at the end. So, you know, if you can find good assets or plots of land in those infill inner city locations, my opinion is that you're onto a winner. And you mentioned before about the US. If we look at the US and we look at, you know, some of the states or pretty much most states, you're seeing sort of double-digit rental growth. In some instances, New Jersey, and around the boroughs, 20-25%. So I think a lot of that will continue to come through into Europe, which is typically lagging.
You know, you mentioned the pandemic and the growth that occurred. People, I think there were an awful lot of people. It seems that there were an awful lot of people who maybe didn't trust e-commerce. They didn't like the idea of putting their credit card on their computer, using it through the internet. The pandemic forced some lifestyle changes. And some of these people suddenly decided, well, if I can't really go out, or I don't think it's prudent to go out, so I'm going to order online. And suddenly they're finding out this is really convenient. And you know what? Nobody stole my credit card number. And I haven't heard anything about my identity, any identity theft or anything like that. This works pretty well. And that suddenly there's this entirely new audience that seems to have decided e-commerce is okay. I'm going to continue doing this because I like the convenience and it's fast and it's easy. Would you agree that there's been this whole new coterie of people who have come to this almost by force because of the pandemic and the quarantining and isolation that took place.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, an important factor here is the age demographic that is now using the internet to purchase, right? Before, you know, more millennial-esque, you know, was really what was driving, shall we say, internet purchases. But, you know, I think now, because one of the reasons being the pandemic is that, you know, people of all ages are actually using the internet to acquire and to purchase items. So that's definitely catapulted and boosted e-commerce penetration without a shadow of a doubt. And I think that that will continue because it's now kind of part and parcel of people's lives, right? Not just because they've been, you know, kept in at home in quarantine for the last 6 months or 3 months, depending on what country you've been in. Actually, you know, I think a lot of people are finding that it's quite convenient and actually in some instances cost effective. Now, I don't think that that's going to completely, you know, kind of stop people going to the shops and whatnot and acting like humans, but it's definitely there to stay.
Yeah, I think they are there to stay is what it looks like. Now, let's talk about the evolution of the sector, because if we think back 10 years, 20 years, when people 20 years ago, people were ordering from catalogs and waiting for things to show up and it would be days. You know, even 10 years ago when Amazon first broke on the scene and other e-commerce retailers, people would expect the package would arrive in 3 or 5 or maybe even 7 days. Now, when you order, and there are exceptions, but now when you order, it's the next day. So they've created this competitiveness with the physical or traditional retailers that didn't used to exist. And then there's also the, you know, well, I'll get into that a little bit later. I was thinking in terms of kind of you order at a store, a traditional retailer like, say, Target, and let's say they're only a mile away. That's almost like a last mile sort of situation, but you need to go pick it up unless that order is at a certain level. And they say, we will deliver it because you've exceeded a certain level. Amazon and some others will deliver it regardless. But the quickness of the delivery has made a real difference for people. And as you look forward, David, how's this sector going to evolve, maybe in terms of not only of timeliness, but some other ways. I mean, when you think about technologies, how will technology affect this sector? How will it evolve over time?
I mean, it's a big question that probably the occupiers and supply chain demographic is certainly looking at in a lot of detail. We'll have more information about, but you know, clearly, automation, drones, and different types of technology, autonomous vehicles are going to play a big part in, you know, in that delivery and the security of that delivery. Because, you know, we don't always receive our parcels in perfect conditions. You know, there are still some nuances around buying online, and you know, those kind of points and you know, reverse logistics and, you know, sending back your goods because you're not happy, and site selection, choice selection. So there are certain things that definitely need to be improved. And, you know, I very much believe that technology will play a big part in making that whole transaction, you know, a lot smoother than what it is. It's not just about receiving it today, now. It's also, you know, how is that service and how you can track that service and how good is that service? And that's something that's continuously evolving. You know, I think I was at a conference not so long ago, and, you know, they were talking about some of the players like Amazon, like I mentioned before, that they're sending goods to a warehouse near your house before you even have decided to click and order it because of the information and data that they have. So those times of delivery are going to continue shortening. You know, as a consumer, we're becoming, shall we say, probably more bossier by the day in terms of the, you know, the times that we want to receive items and where we want to receive it. And, you know, there is definitely different optionalities. You mentioned before click and collect, you know, that could be an option. You know, if you really need to go and collect something, maybe it's quicker for, you know, the occupier or the supplier to send it to a retail warehouse that's 3 minutes from your house or 2 minutes from your house. So there are various different types of solutions, but I certainly see it all going in the same direction.
you know, there's a lot of conversation around drones, but that conversation has been going on for a while, and I have yet to see it actually being deployed. What about drones? How far off are they? How, when I think in terms of regulation, because you're talking about having these gadgets flying around through the air carrying packages, where do you see drones actually being most useful? And when do you think we're going to see their deployment?
So I think, look, with drones, I'm certainly no expert in this particular field, but I think with drones, clearly the regulations, health and safety play a big part. So there's definitely going to be, you know, a lot of evolution, you know, regarding drones and how they can operate within the supply chain, in the coming years, undoubtedly. I still think it's a little bit away, right? Where I can see drones particularly being helpful is maybe inside the actual warehouses themselves, picking up the, you know, pallets, moving parcels, you know, more inside the warehouses themselves than outside, like they have robots, for example, or, you know, further automation. So I think it's TBC. I've been hearing about drones for the last 6-7 years, and I don't see drones flying around my head delivering goods at the moment. So, you know, I think for now it's probably a few years till we start seeing anything like that. But it's an interesting concept, right? If it can be unlocked and they can find a solution, then, you know, maybe it's a very fast, efficient, and viable solution to adhering to the consumer's requests. I think autonomous vehicles is probably going to play, a stronger hand. It wouldn't surprise me if you have autonomous vehicles going round and round, you know, motorways and roads, you know, where ultimately there, you know, there's a sort of some sort of movement of goods, and they're just going round and round until they're ready to go to your house. Something along those lines. Also, what we're seeing a lot in the US that we haven't seen in Europe is outdoor storage, iOS. And here, you know, it's basically, you know, the likes of a DHL or an Amazon, as I mentioned, that needs outdoor storage for their fleets so that they can deliver to the consumer. And most of these vehicles are electronic. Most of these vehicles are autonomous or electric. So I think that will also play a huge part when it comes to last mile.
Yeah, I think people would be a lot more comfortable with autonomous, not that they're comfortable entirely with autonomous vehicles, but I think that drones flying around is going to be something that's going to take a little getting used to. You hinted at this whole idea of theft of packages. We see a lot of that in the United States, and a lot of strategies have been used. For instance, like when a lot of people working at home, so when a package is delivered, they ring the doorbell and just walk away just to let you know there's a package there. You get an email with a photograph of the package, you know, proof of life. Here's the package sitting next to your planter. Then the storage units that they're using as well. Now, you're the real estate guy, though, and we're talking real estate investors. Is there anything else real estate investors need to know about this space that we haven't already covered, David? What would the exclamation point be?
Well, I think that this space is, if we're looking at the subsector and I'm analyzing the data, I think it's outperforming the traditional logistics market in terms of big box. The good thing about last mile, in my opinion, is that it's almost like a covered land play. So there could be alternative uses further down the line. I think that if you have a good, solid position in an infill location that serves as last mile today, you can pivot and be flexible, not only when you're selling to the next buyer, but the next buyer's buyer and the next buyer's buyer's buyer. Whereas, you know, more traditional big box locations, which may have a great credit covenant or tenant that are 50, 60, 70 kilometers outside of a city, it could work now. But if for whatever reason that occupier decides to change their strategy, then it could be more concerning, right? It could become obsolete. There might not be alternative uses. So I think that generally last mile also provides quite a safe downside. It's downside protected. And I think that's another reason why, as real estate investors, we particularly like this sub asset class, so to speak.
Our guest has been David Hunt. He's managing partner and head of global logistics investments at Thor Equities. David, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, look, really appreciate it. Thank you for all the questions, and it's been good to talk about the various different topics. Really appreciate it.
This podcast was sponsored by AppFolio.